Let me welcome everybody to the Parsha class for Shemos, Parsha Shemos 5770. We resume after a two-week hiatus when I was absent. And unfortunately, that happens every year. And we always miss the end of Bereshis.
You went home from Yom Tov.
But this year, we start anew at the beginning of the Sefer. Let me give a brief orientation for what we're doing this year in our class. Every year we try to have a theme or an approach or a commentary and look at the Parsha from that angle. This year we have chosen the topic of tefillah, of prayer, and the particular text of Rabbi Shimshon Pinkus in his Sefer Sha'arim B'Tefillah, Gates of Prayer. I have to tell you that without exaggeration, for this approach and for this Sefer, there is probably not a better Parsha than Parsha Shemos. I'll tell you why. The format of the Sefer Sha'arim B'Tefillah is based on a Midrash or two Midrashim where the Chazal, or the sages of the oral tradition, list 10 or 13, depending on which version of the Midrash, different terms that are used throughout the Tanakh for tefillah, or prayer. And this format of the Sefer is to take each of those terms, and in the previous classes I've read the list, each of those terms and explain what the essence of each term is and how it represents a different flavor, a different form of tefillah. Well, if this list starts here, I think there's one, he does 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Okay, he analyzes 13 different terms. The first one is called Bitzur, which I'll explain in a minute. The next three are called Shava'ah, translated commonly as supplication, Se'aka, translated as crying out, and Na'aka, translated as groaning or moaning. And in Parsha Shemos, we have three of these. Those three, Shava, Sa'aka, and Na'aka, within two verses of each other. And they're all very rare. They're all very rare. And all three of them appear in two pesukim in our parsha. That's incredible. So let me read to you those three pesukim, and then we will listen to how Rabbi Pinkus teaches us these different meaning of these different terms. The verse begins on page 300. We'll start with pasuk Chaf Gimel 23. And we'll read 23, 24, and 25. This takes place as the Egyptian slavery has reached its peak. The Jewish people are now fully and severely oppressed. They have been working. I think of the 210 years that they spent in Mitzrayim, 86 of those years were considered to be oppressive. Before that, they were just strangers or they were servants, but the last 86 years were considered to be oppressive. And this is like right before the end. Okay? So life is unbearable. So listen to the Torah. Vayhi bayomim harabim hohem. And it was during those many days. Yamas Melech Mitzrayim. It happened that the king of Egypt died. Vayeonchu v'nei Yisrael minhu avodah vayizaku. The children of Israel groaned. Okay, that's vayeonchu. That's not one of the terms. Minhu avodah. They groaned because of the work. Vayizaku, and they cried out. Notice that the word has a Zion in it. And the Zion, Vayizaku, is sometimes substituted as with a Tzadi, Vayitzaku. They mean the same. Za'aka or Tze'aka both mean crying out. Batal Shava Sam Elho Elokim, their art scroll says outcry, because of the work, went up to God. Minu Avoda. Their outcry went up to God. Now that's probably not a great translation, because outcry is the same thing as cried out. But really in Hebrew, there are two different terms. By Izaku, they cried out. Shava Sam is a different word. So we're going to translate that as their supplication. You see what I'm saying? Because art scroll uses the same English verb, even though in Hebrew they're two separate verbs. But there you have Vayizaku, Shava Sam. And then the next pasuk 24, Vayishma Elokim Es Na'akasam. Hashem heard their moaning. Na'aka. That's the third one. Vayizkor Elokim Es Pri. So at this point, now Hashem says, enough. The servitude has gotten so bad, the oppression is so bad, that's it. I am now going to rescue them. Vayizkor Elokim Es Pri. So as Avraham Es Yitzchak as Yaakov, he put into motion the remembrance of the bris, the covenant. Of course, it doesn't mean that Hashem had forgotten. And he says, oh my goodness, I almost forgot the bris. It means that he put into play the wheels for the fulfillment of that bris. Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, vayeda Elokim. Hashem saw the children of Israel, and he knew. And the very, very next incident is Hashem coming to Moshe at the burning bush and asking him to go to Mitzrayim. So you see that after this, this was like the... You know, this turning point, the final straw, you know, if you will, that put Yitzhias Mitzrayim into motion, and it all came about at this climactic point of three of the different terminologies of prayer. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah. Does that mean that we should try to? Can we use that? How do we use that?
Well, that's what we're going to do today, is we're going to listen to Rabbi Pinchas, how he explains what is the difference between crying out, supplication, and moaning. These are from the 13 different flavors of tefillah, of our chazal. That's the purpose of this sefer, to identify the different terms for tefillah, the different terms for prayer. And that's what we're going to do. With Hashem's help today.
So what about the one, the weapon on each other's neck? What's the lashon there?
Crying. That's like weeping. That's not necessarily a prayer. That's just a human expression of emotion. That doesn't have to be necessarily directed to Hashem in prayer. That's just crying. Here, crying out means crying for help. That's what it means. All right, but we'll get into this more. Before we are able to appreciate the nuances, the differences between these different terms, we first have to make sure that we understand the basic premise here. The basic premise is that tefillah is asking Hashem for help. Because we need help. That is the basic definition and the basic premise of tefillah. Rabbi Pinchas quotes for us from the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says in Siman 98, chapter 98, paragraph 3, one should pray in a supplicatory manner, like a poor man begging at the entrance. But it should be tranquil. Praying must not appear a burden to him for which he seeks to be relieved. Which means that the basic premise, and this is Shmon Esrei, this is classic tefillah. The basic stance of tefillah is, Hashem, I'm a poor poor person. I lack my needs. You can provide them. Please help me. It's not hysterical. It's not out of control. But it is supplication. It is requesting for mercy. That's the basic premise of tefillah. That's even before you get to these three terms. That's the basic definition of tefillah. Now, in our classes in Sefer Bereishis, we elaborated on this a lot. Why did Hashem create mankind with so many needs? Why did He make us so vulnerable and so weak? Compared to all the other animals, they have what they need without any effort. Why did Hashem create so many needs in man for which we have to pray for help?
Because He wants to have a relationship.
And that's the answer. The answer is because He wants us to learn how to pray to Him and relate to Him. And it seems, based on human nature, we don't tend to turn to God so much when things are good, although we're going to learn that's even a higher level of tefillah, when you turn to God when things are good. But most of the human nature is that you ask for help when things are not so good. And so Hashem, not wanting to trust us that we will turn to Hashem no matter what, He made sure that we had plenty of things to ask Him for. The goal is to relate to Hashem. But the avenue, the vehicle, is through needs and through asking for help. That is the basic premise for prayer.
And that's where they put in that part about the king and his son with somebody who was taking care of him, and he was giving him an annual allowance, and then he changed it where he had to get him asked.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of analogies illustrating that, yeah, if a parent doesn't really want to have a relationship with their child, they may decide to give their child all that they need in a self-sustaining way. You know, I think I gave the example once, I'm giving you an apartment, here's a credit card, here's a car, here are the keys, goodbye. You know, this way the parent doesn't expect or want the child to come running. Whereas if he doesn't give him all that, he knows the child is going to keep in touch. You know, dear dad, dear mom, you know, the S's the dollar sign. That's a funny joke. Anyway, now let me illustrate this point about how this is so fundamental to Judaism, that we dive into Hashem because we need things. Listen to this incredible halachic analysis of tefillah for a moment. Some of you may have heard that there's a discussion about whether the obligation to daven is from the Torah or is it rabbinic. Have you ever heard such a discussion like that? Well, it's pretty well known amongst, you know, students of Jewish law that there is a dispute between Rambam and Ramban, between Maimonides and Nachmanides, about this. Everyone agrees that what we do when we daven, when we take a sitter and we daven Shacharis, and we daven Mincha, and we daven Maariv, this is not a Torah obligation. Everyone agrees to that. That's rabbinic. The dispute is, what does the Torah require? The Torah law. Rambam says that the Torah law requires that we daven sometime every day. Something, some expression, some form of tefillah. It can be our own words, it can be morning, afternoon, or evening, but sometime each day we have to daven something. That's the Rambam's concept of the Torah obligation. Ramban says, you don't even have to do that. You don't even have to do that. But what you do have to do is, when you're in need, you have to daven. Now, maybe that's once a week, Maybe that's once a year. Maybe that's once a lifetime. But when you're in need, you have to daven. The rabbis came along and said, sorry, folks, you got to daven. Not only are you going to daven every day, you're going to daven three times a day. I don't care if you're the Rambam or if you're the Ramban. The rabbis instituted formalized prayer at set times. But the Rambam says from the Torah, once a day. The Ramban says from the Torah, when there's an ace sorrow, when there's a time of need. Now here's the part that we don't always analyze, the implications of this. Would we agree that if a person let a day go by without davening at all, that he has neglected to perform a positive commandment, according to the Rambam, positive commandment from the Torah, if they let a day go by without davening, have they neglected a positive commandment? Yes. According to the Rambam. You don't have to daven in the Siddur, but if you forget, if you went and let a day go by without saying, please God, you know, help me with my situation, that one has neglected a positive, has violated a positive commandment. Here's the part that we don't necessarily realize. What about according to the Ramban? If you let a day go by without davening, have you violated a positive commandment? Not necessarily. But if you had an Eis Tzara, if something happened to you that you needed help, and you didn't daven in response to that need, have you violated a positive commandment? Yes. Mm-hmm. According to the Ramban, any time a person is in a need, a needy situation, and they think to themselves, I'll handle it, it's okay, and doesn't turn that into a tefillah, you've neglected to do a mitzvah. You've passed up a mitzvah. It's as if you let a day go by without davening, according to the Ramban. That's the thing. In other words, if we are obligated by the Torah to respond to Eis Tzara, to times of need, with tefillah. That's the obligation. That is the Torah's requirement. If we don't respond to an Eis Tzara, to a time of need, and daven, then we are not fulfilling the mitzvah. That, I think, to me, that like drives home the point. And, you know, forget about Shachris, Mincha, Mara, forget about the Siddur, forget about reading Hebrew. If we do not respond appropriately to needs by davening, by talking to Hashem, we are not doing a mitzvah. Yes?
What about expressing gratitude? If we only daven when we're in need, when do we express our gratitude?
Okay, so that's what I mentioned. Is even a higher level, and God willing, in the not too distant future, when we when we get to Parshas Bishalach, and we speak about the parting of the sea and the song that follows that, we are going to learn a lot more about the expression of tefillah as thanks and praise. I want to get into that a lot, and Rabbi Pinchas speaks about that a lot. But that is a higher, that is considered to be like tefillah 201. Tefillah when we need something is 101. Mm. It's more basic to human nature, and it is more required.
Well, somebody can do that all day long. They really have a lot
In fact, that's what the sages in the Talmud says. Halavai sheyisfalel adam kol hayom. Halavai sheyisfalel. Would it be that a person would daven all day long? The reason we don't do that is because there are other things to do. But that would not be considered excessive, crazy. I mean, a person, you know, shouldn't become obsessed to the point that they're not doing all the other things they have to do. But it's not unreasonable. But a person should constantly be talking to God. Sarvas nisht, why not?
Shouldn't they come to it, though, on their own because they love God? And because
eventually they will. Eventually they will. But it's not the, that's why I said the 101, tefillah 101, is to come to God out of prayer because we need help. That's tefillah 101. Okay, so now back to the Parsha and to the three new terms. What we learn from this Torah, what we learn from this Parsha and from the terms of Rabbi Pinchas in the Midrash, is that this is just the beginning. I need some help. Please help me, Hashem. That's just the beginning. But we all know that there's all different kinds of needs. You walk into the store, I need help finding a certain product. So you ask the clerk or whatever, can you please help me find it? Sure. I had a need. I needed help. I asked for it. But there's a big difference between having that kind of a need and having a more serious need. Doctor, I need help. I'm sick. I need parnasa. I need a job. I need a livelihood. I need a shidduch. These are bigger needs. And sometimes a person can be a little bit parve about those needs and can say, you know, once in a while, yes, I do need this. But other times they don't feel that urgency, that pressing need every minute of their waking hours. And then there's some times when it's urgent. I need help now. I need help badly. This, says Rav Pinchas, is the term shava'a, supplication. Asking for help because it's urgent. It's pressing. I need it now. I need it badly. I can't be without it. That's shava'a. That's another rung in the ladder of tefillah. The basic premise is I need something, and therefore I ask Hashem for help. The next rung is I need it badly. I need it urgently. Help me now. That's shava'a. Pinka says that it would be, and this is something which really requires a lifetime of concentration and of learning and of davening, it would be appropriate if a person felt the urgency and the necessity and the pressing nature of even our most basic needs all the time. It would not be inappropriate. In fact, it would be considered on the high level of closeness to God if a person woke up every morning and felt that he was urgently dependent on God just for his basic needs in his basic life. Think about it. If we didn't have God's constant sustenance, we wouldn't be able to live. We wouldn't be able to stand up straight. We wouldn't be able to breathe. We wouldn't be able to walk. All of the brachas that we say every morning. Is it not an urgent need that I have to live? We look Chas v'shalom at people in the hospital that need help breathing, that need help walking, that need help eating. Is it not an urgent need? Now, we don't think of it that way because, for Hashem, most of us, because Hashem has blessed us with such abundant goodness that we take it for granted. But He is literally breathing air into us every day, every minute. It is a an avoda. It is an act of divine service to, over time, this is not something that you can force yourself, but over time to come to realize our utter dependence on God, and that our just living another day is something for which we need urgent care and urgent response. This is true in gashmias, in physical needs, as well as in ruchnias, as in spiritual needs. Listen to this beautiful prayer. Maybe you will hear. You've heard it so many times, and listen if you don't hear it differently now. This is something that I heard from one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, Rabbi Olshin, who came to Atlanta. No, this was on a phone share that he shared with all of the kololim throughout the country. Once in a while, there's like a hookup, and he made this beautiful point. Listen to this tefillah. Before Shema, Ava Rabbah, with abundant love. Avinu ha'av harachaman. Hamarachem rachem aleinu. Our Father, the merciful Father, who acts mercifully, have mercy upon us. Merciful Father, acts mercifully, have mercy upon us. V'sein b'libeinu lehavinu lehaskil, instill in our hearts to understand and elucidate. Lishmoa l'lmod ulalameh, to listen, learn, teach. Lishmor v'lasos ulakayim, safeguard, perform, and fulfill. Es kol divrei salmu Torah secha b'yahava, all the words of your Torah's teaching with love. Rabbi Olshin says, okay, we're asking Hashem to instill in us spiritual value, spiritual awareness, spiritual growth. Our Father, the merciful Father, who acts mercifully, have mercy upon us. That's something that you ask when you're like in trouble. Have mercy. Somebody's like threatening you. Have mercy, please, don't do that. Why are we connecting a request for spiritual things, for learning, for Torah, for mitzvahs, for Torah and mitzvahs, with have mercy? Says Rav Olshin, that's because we don't realize how urgent it is that we have Torah and mitzvahs. So we think of it as like something extra, a merit badge. But if we understood, what it means to live without Torah and mitzvahs, without a spiritual connection with God, we would realize that we're dying, we're in dire straits. And if we don't have Torah and mitzvahs today, if we don't have Torah and mitzvahs tomorrow, we're in trouble. And so we should feel like saying, Hashem, I need it. I need it. It's urgent. I need to have understanding. I need to have spiritual enlightenment. I need to be able to fulfill mitzvahs. Please have mercy. If I don't have it, I'm going to die. That's a high level. But hear what our tefillah is saying to us. Our tefillah is saying to us that we have to have shava'ah. We have to have supplication, which is urgent prayers. For everything, for spiritual, and certainly for physical. This is the concept of Shava'ah. So, once again, the premise of tefillah is, I need something, please help me. But since that can be taken as something casual, an acknowledgement of our need, that's also a level of, believe me, just to realize that we need something, and that we're not, you know, macho and self-sufficient. That's a madrega also. That's a madrega too. Just to daven, even on the casual level, is a madrega. But then, to deepen our awareness and deepen our understanding of how dependent we are, both in physical and in spiritual ways, that every tefillah becomes something of an urgent nature, that's something that takes a lifetime of work. But that's why we have a term called shava'ah. It took the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, maybe 210 years until they made their first Shava'ah. And that indeed may be the experience of many of us in our lives. You know, there's no atheists in the foxhole. You know, the plane is going down. That for some people, that's the first time they have a shava'ah. They realize that they need something urgently. Before that, they were kind of lulled into a sense of security. I don't need God, like the famous parking lot story that I always tell. No thanks. You know, he says, I need a parking spot. God, if you give me a parking spot, I will, you know, so I can make my meeting, I will give charity. Then suddenly the car pulls out and opens up a spot. And he says, no thanks, God, I found one. You know, we don't realize that we were dependent on God. Okay, that's Shavuot. We have two more, and then we're going to wrap it up. The next one is Ze'aka, or Tse'aka, crying out. What's the difference between shava and tzaka? Supplicating because I have an urgent need and crying out. Crying out is also urgent. Says Rav Pinkus, the difference between shava and tzaka is that shava is with words and tzaka is without words. Which one is on a higher level? The tefillah, where you put together, you know, beautiful, poetic, Avinu ha'av harachamon hamrachem rachem aleinu v'sein b'libeinu, that's shava'ah, or help, which is on a higher level, says Rav Pinkus, quoting many different statements from the Zohar and from the Talmud, the one without words is on a higher level. Why? Because it's coming from your heart. It's not habit. You didn't interrupt your emotions to have the mental concentration to think of the right words. He says, example, a guy is walking and, I don't know, somebody's about to mug him. So first he says, he sees somebody across the street. I'm about to get mugged. Can you please help me? So the guy on the other side of the street, maybe he hears him, maybe he doesn't hear him. He's a little, doesn't want to, he's got to go somewhere. So he just keeps walking. The mugger comes closer and closer, and the victim says, ah! Then the guy across the street is going to come. Why? Because that really pierced him, because it was the guy crying out from his heart. That's more effective. Just like it's more effective with people, it's more effective with Hashem.
Actually crying out.
Crying out, without words. I mean, maybe you could say, you know, something, help me! If a person can do that, cry out to Hashem even without words, because they really feel urgent and desperate, they have reach such a high level in tefillah. Incredible. It can pierce the heavens. That's za'aka. Finally, there's na'aka. What's na'aka? How do you get more than za'aka? I mean, za'aka seems to be everything. Na'aka, which he calls moaning. Anybody want to take a stab at it? What's the difference between za'aka and na'aka?
Well, the source of the word na'aka.
It's such a rare word. It's got the aleph in there. I'll tell you. Za'aka is you're crying out to someone to help. Na'aka is you're just screaming. You're not even trying to get anybody's attention. I may have actually confused you, because the example of going, ah, is probably na'aka. I probably messed that up. Za'aka is when you are trying to get Hashem to hear you, and you do it with your whole heart, unencumbered by the verbiage. Na'aka, you're not even it's an instinct. It's a cry. You're not even necessarily calling to anybody. You're just crying because it's instinctive to cry. Now, if that's the case, so what kind of a tefillah is that? It's not even a tefillah. You're not even directing it towards God. And yet the Torah says, Vayishma Elokim es na'akasam. Hashem heard their moans. Even when they were just moaning and groaning because they were being beaten. Hashem heard that too. The Torah is teaching us that even when a person doesn't even direct their cries to him, he still hears it.
That's not on a higher level than the other one, because you're not saying it to Hashem.
It's not on a higher level unless you pick up on this and you say, wait a minute. So why, if Na'aka is just me crying out to myself, then why is it one, and so Hashem hears it, fine. Why is it one of the languages of tefillah? I'm not even davening. This is what Rav Pinchas says. He says, oh, listen, all of this is new to me. I'm not an expert at this, but I'm just sharing with you what he writes. He says that if a person knows that Hashem listens even to our moans which are not directed to him, and he can train him or herself that when you scream out in pain, have kavana that he's listening. Direct the screams to him. In other words, it's not like a tzaka when you are deliberately screaming out, crying out to him. Help me, God. Na'aka is just, ag! It hurts! Have kavana when you're crying out in pain that Hashem should hear.
So,
then it's on a higher level. Why is it on a higher level? Because you're harnessing your self-preservation instinct, and you're turning that to God too. That even my cries, even my pain, even my screams of pain, I'm still and pushing that, directing that to Hashem.
So let me give you an example.
Yes.
All right. So a person is drowning.
Yeah.
They yell for help.
Yeah.
Now, their instinct is that somebody will, not to Hashem, but their instinct is that, hey, maybe there's somebody around who can save me.
Yes.
Somebody on the beach.
Yes.
But they're not thinking, God save me.
Yes.
Okay, what about that?
So that, I would say, is a na'aka.
Right.
And first of all, by the way, a person should also do hishtadlus, you know, natural means to try to help oneself. You also daven, and you also, so if you see somebody on the beach, you should try to get their attention. You know, like the joke, I sent you the a helicopter. Try to take steps too. But even if the person is not intending it to be a prayer, it's an interesting question because, no, you see, it could be a na'aka, but then it could be not a na'aka. If he has a presence of mind to call the person, and he, so that means he's not totally hysterical, and he didn't cry out to Hashem, that could be a negative. As you say, he's trying to get that person's attention, and he's not saying, and help me Hashem too. But if he truly is screaming hysterically, just because his instinct, he feels that he's going to drown, that's a na'aka, and Hashem will hear you. He tells a story about one of the great gedolim of previous generations, Rav Baruch Ber Leibovitz, from Kamenets in Lithuania. When he was a little boy, he did something he was supposed to do, and his father was scolding him, and he was crying. The little boy was crying. He was, I don't know, 5 years old. He was crying and crying because he was, you know, he felt bad and everything. And then all of a sudden, he runs to the shelf, and he takes a sitter, and he starts davening mincha. And his father says, "Why? What happened? Like, why are you davening just at this minute? You're in the middle." He says, "I figure that since I'm crying anyway, I might as well direct my cries to Hashem." And that's what he means. Take our natural instincts, which are really kind of like self-centered and selfish, and direct those to God too. All of this was introduced and initiated to the Jewish people through the slavery of Egypt. And I don't think it's you know, a stretch to say that all of these experiences that we went through were designed to teach us the various levels, the various stages of tefillah. Apparently, Chazal want us to know about these different stripes, these different flavors of tefillah, because whatever situation we are in life, we should use it for tefillah. And in fact, that's why Hashem puts us in these situations. You know, the famous quote from Chazal that why were the matriarchs barren? Each one of them, because Hashem desires the tefillos of the righteous. That means everything was like in the reverse. Hashem made them barren so that they would daven, and when they reached the level of tefillah that was their potential, Hashem took away the need, and now I'll give it to you, because the whole reason I gave you that need was because I wanted you to raise yourselves in tefillah. And we should realize, no matter what, there's no such thing that's too dire or too urgent or too desperate that it cannot be seen as an opportunity to strengthen our connection with Hashem. So, wonderful, thank you. I want to just mention, because Ruby Grossblatt is here, and she told me...
Why I'm here.
You weren't here. That she came because she was on her way going somewhere else, and she felt herself starting to lose control of the car and start to spin, and her car went down her street, and she was crying out to Hashem for help. And Hashem answered her prayers. You know why? Because she ended up in our class.
Because Hashem sent my neighbor across the street, Josh, right behind me, who also almost banged into me, but he didn't by this much, right, Josh? And he said, do you want to go to a class on Torah? There are the women there.
Whatever.
No, I need it. Yep. I think I'm somewhat confused here. What gives man the privilege to call upon Hashem when he is in need? Now, the way I hear you saying, even if a man doesn't pray, or in a case doesn't, these are my words, not yours, does not recognize Hashem, but he becomes in need, and he calls upon Hashem to help and save him. What gives him that privilege? How does he earn it?
I assume you mean that Hashem could turn to that person and say, well, you never called me before, why all of a sudden are you calling me now? Right? Is that what you mean?
I'm not concerned with Hashem's response at this point. I'm concerned with a person having the ability, if you will, to call upon someone. If I, as an individual, if I respect a person and I respect their time and their values, sometimes I'm very reluctant to impose myself upon them.
Got it. So you want to know what gives any Jew, and particularly a Jew that's not so involved with serving Hashem on a day-to-day basis, what gives him the right to monopolize Hashem's time by praying for his petty needs? And that, my dear friend, Herb, and all of us, and myself, we, our greatest deficiency, if I may say so, spiritually, in these times that we live in, is that we have no idea how much Hashem loves us. We don't think that we count. We don't realize that we are like an only child to Hashem, every single one of us. And if I may suggest a way to convince yourself of that is when you wake up in the morning and you open your eyes and you get out of bed, ask yourself, at whose mercy am I here? Why am I here today? Hashem. He decided that I, Herbert Mendel, should be alive and well today. Well, why did he do that? He must want me to be here. He must enjoy my presence. If he didn't want me here, I wouldn't be here. So that means he likes me. I once heard Rav Don Segel say, he's one of the Mashgichim in Eretz Yisrael, said if a person's ever depressed, let them just think about the fact that for some reason or another, Hashem wants me to be here. And that will help him out of his depression. Because if Hashem didn't want us here, he wouldn't be here. Obviously, he's got hope for us. He's got a plan. He thinks that our life is valuable. And if Hashem decided that he wants me here, I have the right to talk to him. How's that?
I don't know. There's several billion people on the earth.
Hashem is able. He's not like you and I that are limited in our ability to process information. He can talk to all of us at the same time.
The guy in my relationship reminds me of a joke. The guy in New York, young guy in New York, calls his mother in Florida. And he says, "How are you, Mom?" She says, "Terrible, terrible. What's the matter, Mom?" "I haven't eaten in a month." "You haven't eaten in a month? Why?" "Because I'm afraid when you might call, my mouth would be full."
Funny.
Wow.
Very good.
I
once went to a retreat that actually Mark and Barbara organized, and I believe it was Rabbi Edelstein or
from
California,
from Los Angeles,
and Rabbi Elon and Rabbi
Adlerstein.
Adlerstein and Rabbi Elon would ask the question, "How about if my carburetor breaks down? Should I ask Hashem to help me fix it?"
I remember that.
Remember that question? And Rabbi Thelman said, Rabbi Elon said, "You're going to let a carburetor breaking down keep you from that opportunity to talk to Hashem?" In other words, everything is an opportunity to talk to Hashem.
Yeah. And according to the Ramban, if I'm understanding Rabbi Pinkus's words, according to the Ramban, if you don't pray, then you're missing a mitzvah.
Actually, Adler's thing I remember said, and I'm saying, come to the channel, you know.
Thank you.
Ask for anything.
So does it make sense? Wild card.
You might think.
Gift certificate. Okay. I'll decide later what I do.
I was supposed to hear this today.
Oh my goodness.
I have no idea why, but I really do have an idea why.
Well, of course you do.
Actually, I have a great idea why. But can you believe that? I was on my way to a Weight Watcher meeting and to Emory Hospital. So I thought, I could do this. I could go down the hill. I didn't even think my hill was going to be slippery. Mm.
Really? I won't.
Well, now that you know we're here every Friday, 12:30. You don't have to slide down the hill to join us.
That'll be that I have to make my Shabbos before 12:30.
Ah.
That's also a good thing.
Okay. Good Shabbos, everyone. Thank you.